committee of the whole meeting to order. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Mayor Taylor. Alderman Olson.
Here.
Alderman Salmon.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Here.
Alderman Stratton.
Here. All right, so that's the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number one, Jack, proposed policy relative to sewer extension and cost recovery for the Ryan Creek Interceptor Public Sanitary Sewer Project and currently unsewered public sanitary sewer service areas in the city.
The city actually hired a consultant, Rickard Melke, to do this some time ago, and we felt that the Ryan Creek Interceptor area has some major extensions, trunk sewers often to service the area. One thing we tried to set up with this and kind of followed our water connection, our water extension policy. And the problem we've always had with sewers, if a sewer goes in front of a house, our code says right now that you have to connect to that sewer. Therefore, there was no way we could have a developer extend sewers and have the person pay upon time of connection, because they had to hook on with the year, man. They had to hook onto it, they would have had to pay the prorated share of the non-oversized costs. So basically what our water extension policy, and this is following pretty much the water extension policy, which has been in effect since 1977, is that if a developer wants to extend water to provide for a new development, and he has to extending this water past existing development, and unless the council wants to do it and feels it's a public benefit for special assessments, in other words, these people have failing wells or something, they need the water, then the developer has to pay the full cost of extending that water. The city will enter into an agreement, and that's usually covered in the development agreement, to pay the oversized cost. We really can't assess that or make the abutting property owner pay that. Over a five-year period, at an equal amount each year, so a fifth of it each year, if there's funds available. And that the abutting property owners then don't have to pay for that when it's extended, but will have to pay at time of connection, will have to reimburse them, the developer, the landowner that's extending the main, for the 8-inch portion or the non-oversized cost. And that's worked quite well for water. We did that on 51st Street, Oakwood, all over the city, and it's worked quite well because water has generally been extended by developers. Only a few cases have we actually served existing subdivisions with water. And one is Phyllis Lane area. They had bad water. One was North Cape Estates, yeah, that's right across the street, and then a portion of Carroll Circle that had benzene in their water, and I think from an abandoned filling station years ago. We did a little water extension on 36th and Acre Avenue a few years ago because the people requested, they had kind of a community well and the piping was failing. But beyond that, the city has really not extended much water for existing development. In the southwest part of the city, we've got a few little pockets of development, but generally, as we see it, sewers will probably be extended by people wanting to develop either commercial or single family or multiple family developments. And this way, by establishing in this area such that if a developer extends sewers, that the person is not required to hook onto it, then that allows us to have an extension policy very similar to our water extension policy. So that's kind of the gist of it. And then kind of parallel with this, we've had a contract with Ricker and Mielke, the city has, for developing an impact fee for sewer connection. We've never had an impact fee for sewer connection. We have a connection fee for existing homes within the rest of the city, except for the all the city right now. And this would carve out the Ryan Creek Interceptor and set a impact fee such that they went through Rick and Mielke went through a study to see what would be the cost, oversized cost, to extend all these trunk line sewers. And it came up with a little over $2,900 impact fee. And so that's what they're recommending. And then instead of using the amount of estimated amount of water, which we've used for the water fee, which we had a lot of problems with commercial on, this is all based on meter size. So unfortunately, you never meter sewer, because wastewater is very difficult to meter, where water coming into a building is very easy to meter. And if you have somebody that uses a lot of water for an industry, we can put also a second meter and meter that kind of water that doesn't go down the sewers. And generally, right now, our sewer service charge is based on a flat rate for single family and two family, although I do see someday that the city would want to switch to a metered rate. But until we get most of the homes metered, we still have maybe 20% of the homes in the older subdivisions that have wells and don't have any meters. So on those, we'd have to have a flat rate for sewer service. So we really kind of are staying with that. So, but in this case, the impact fee would be on meter size. The sewer impact fee is based on the water meter size, and they are listed in that memo. And they are comparison on an equivalent residential unit.
Alderman Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I may, Jack, the purpose of this presupposes that it's an impact fee for the Ryan Creek Interceptor, but to pay for the trunk lines to get to it, correct?
Not the actual Ryan Creek Interceptor, because that's being paid for only by the sewage district.
So we have an impact fee for sewage, you know that?
Yes.
So this would be, in reality, this is a modification of the impact fee for sewage.
But this will only be for the Ryan Creek. And we don't have an impact fee because we really don't have a program for extension of sewers in the rest of the city. There is no program.
Oh, okay.
There is no dates. What the council has always basically said, we'll pull the area if the people want it, we'll extend it. So we've never really, from that, come up with an impact fee. I would suggest that at the next go-around on impact fees that we work up at least a tentative schedule. And we don't have many areas. There's the Hawthorne Lane area, and we have pulled them. 116th Street, we pulled them, and a greater percentage. That was a very high percentage that didn't want it. It was kind of close in the Hawthorne Lane area, but majority didn't want it. We got a little piece on Oakwood Road. You'll see tomorrow night, I got a couple tiny little pieces on 76th Street. It's just a group of a couple lots here and there that don't have sewer. But it would be easy for us to come up with a program and maybe put them out some distance. But we will probably see a push in the future. 95% of all the residents in the city of Franklin are served by sewer at this point in time. In fact, it's more than 95%.
Thank you.
Alderman Skransky.
Yeah, with everything that you got in here, Jack, and all these stuff, I've got a lot of questions on stuff, and there's not enough time. And there are a lot of questions on this whole thing. I'm going to be asking this thing to be put off for a while to get some answers, and I got a bunch of people to talk to about this. It's not imminent that we have to have this right now. So I just have too many questions I have to talk with people about on this thing, and I don't want to see this thing being implemented prematurely just to get it in here. So that's my problem with it right now. And I think the city attorney had his hands on there.
I did, or he did. Okay, it's okay. Alderman Olson?
Well, we don't want a premature implementation. That's always bad.
Yeah.
My only thing is maybe what a change this from the Ryan Creek. I love that the headline says Ryan Creek Public Sanitary Sewer. Mm-hmm. Maybe we ought to be careful just keep it as the Southwest or undeveloped areas. Yeah. It might cause less headaches with Ken.
Right. Let's not target a particular area. This does involve more than just that area.
Jack, is there a need? When do you want this done by? I mean, is there any reason we can't put it off for all of us?
I think we put off. I think it probably should be done in the next month or two. We already have a request for a sewer extension. I can write the letter for the sewer extension and just I can indicate that our consultant has recommended a fee, because we've got to tell the people what it's going to cost them. But a lot of people will say, yeah, I want sewers. And once they find out what it's going to cost them, they change their mind. Same with water. A lot of people say, gee, I like water. Well, do you realize it's going to probably cost $10,000 for us to assess water main premiums? Well, I don't know. I think I want it. So we'll be sending out letters. The council's directed us to survey this area on Ryan Road, or just a little bit east of Loomis Road to the west county line. And city limits, but I can work around that.
Is this regarding the, like, we have 13 or something?
Yeah. 18.
18 people.
Yeah.
So these people are asking for it, but right now we don't have a policy that will tell them how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, but I think I can get around that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to just indicate that this has been proposed and not acted on by the council.
Alderman Scratchman.
No, I just because I don't want any all of a sudden red lights going on and everybody getting panicky about this thing until we get a little more specifics on it. And that's always the case once it's like a little innuendo or a suggestion gets out there and it gets all blown out of proportion, then everybody goes nuts, and I don't want that.
We need to establish a policy, but we just bring it up today. Alderman Olson, then Alderman Salerman.
If I may, Mr. President, I'd sure like a high level of the type of questions that Alderman Skronsky has, just so I can be more informed and see what the issues may be. Because frankly, I didn't see many issues here. So I'd just like, just on a high level, just a couple of the biggest ones.
That he's getting?
That he wants to discuss.
Oh.
And maybe even do them directly with the city engineer. But yeah. I'd like to know what the issues are, just so I'm
smoking. Okay. Yeah, that makes
right.
sense.
Just a couple of them.
Can you have any?
Well, not at the moment. Like I say, I haven't had a chance to go through this entire thing and sit down on it. And I'd really take the time to go through it, and maybe probably go through it again. And the questions will come up more. And I have a couple of people that I definitely want to talk to. Ones that are asking for it, then the ones that are not going to be asking for it. And I don't want to have clashes here.
Alderman Salmon.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. And since our consultant is in the audience, maybe Jack, you can answer. But we've got one of the current policies says sewer extensions up to a predetermined maximum. That's the current policy. I saw in the reading of this that it would be 300 feet is your maximum.
Four.
Or 400 feet. Or 400 feet from the sewer to the house. I'm talking about frontage.
Frontage there is no maximum. There never has been a maximum. Has been for water, but not sewer.
It's a minimum of 85 feet.
All right. And I guess my question is on the water, is that going to remain 300 feet?
We're not proposing to change water at all. Water extension policy is not being recommended to be changed.
Okay. So if somebody goes and develops this 80-acre parcel and passes over this 80-acre parcel and this 80-acre parcel, tell me how the water fees are going to be paid.
Sewer fees or water fees?
Water.
water phase, the developer would have to pay the total cost to extend it past that other property, including the oversized cost and the regular, what normally would be assessed, has to pay the full cost of that. No cost to the property owner. Property owner never has to hook up.
Okay.
And only when he decides to hook, he or she decides to hook up, they would have to pay.
They have to pay the connection fee, plus they have to pay
the front foot charge.
Front foot charge to the developer.
Well, they pay it to the city, and the city reimburses the developer.
Okay, that was my question on water. Now let's explain to the sewer. Very simple, the same way. This parcel he's going to go by, this parcel he's going to go by, and then he wants to develop this parcel.
The problem we have now, if we just keep our existing sanitary sewer assessment policy, if the developer that wants to extend the sewer extends the sewer past this person's property, the person has to hook up within a year.
Okay.
Therefore, he has to pay his prorated share of the cost within a year because he has to hook up. And I've gone around this with the city attorney over. He says there's no way we really can get around that because we're kind of going round about the assessment policy because we're having had a hearing and we're making this guy hook up. So with this change, when the developer extends that line in front of these properties, larger parcels, that they won't have to hook up. Therefore, they won't have to pay anything until such time as they want to hook up or develop their property. And I think that's what we've kind of heard from a lot of the farmers, particularly in the Ryan Creek Service, Southwest Service Area, whatever you want to call it, that could kill us. We want to continue to farm our property, and just because the developer down the stream from us wants to develop, then we get this big special assessment. This is a way we can protect them, such that they don't have to, and make the developer, you really should develop from your connection on down, because the further you get away, the more costly it is to develop. So the guy close to the connection to the sewer, the Ryan Creek Interceptor, obviously that's going to be less expensive to develop. But it always doesn't work that way. So somebody has another parcel that's further away, he's going to have to pay to get the water, the sewer to that, and the abutting property owners are not going to have to pay. Now, the other end of it is, though, if like on Ryan Road, we just had a petition for sewers, they want to hook up, they want to put it in for their benefit of a number of homes there, then we would do that by normal special assessment where they would have to pay, because there is no developer, they would have to pay, and then the council will make the decision if the majority of the people are in favor or not. And I'm going to, it's important that when we ask the question, that we give them a good idea of what it's going to cost. But I think I have enough information from the study that I can word it such that this is recommended, because I don't think it's going to get any more than what they recommended. But I want to be able to be sure that when we send the letter off for the survey, the people have a good idea of what the impact fee is going to be, because that's a part of the cost.
Next question, as long as I still have the floor. Let's say I'm one of the people that just got bypassed with sewer and I've got a failing septic system. It's going to cost me $5,000 to fix. It's going to cost me $20,000 to put in sewer. Why would I connect to the interceptor?
I don't, and we, in the past, we have not inspected systems. I don't recommend that we do, because if we ever inspect a system, the plumbing inspector inspects it, they're probably going to have to, you can't repair septic systems anymore. You have to take soil tests. You have to prove that they will work. And in most cases, they aren't going to, conventional septic system is not going to work in Franklin. they'd have to put a mound system in or a modified COM 83 system. I would think at that point, depends on how you read this, write this, they could have a choice of repairing their own or connecting the sewer. I can't see many people would put a mound system in. They could divide off a lot that isn't the whole farm, and then they would just have to pay for that lot that they connect. But, a mound system costs about $20,000.
Yeah.
So I don't really see a person that had a failure. And, we're not going to inspect them. We'd have to have a complaint or whatever. But if we had a complaint now, the inspector would go out, and if they had a failing system, they'd have to take care of it. And he usually makes them use their tank as a holding tank until they repair it. And this normally comes from a complaint from a neighbor. They have wastewater flowing over their lands.
Mark has, I don't want to yield the floor, but I'll yield it to Mark.
Mark?
When Jack says we don't want to inspect these systems, our ordinance does provide, we are working on, as I reported, I think in December, that homeowners are expected to have it tested every 3 years, all of those systems, and then report those to us. So we have an initial round of letters that will be going out very shortly to all the properties we've identified that have a residence but are not on the system. Will be developing and maintaining it. So it won't be our inspections, but they will be required to go get
certification.
Get proven inspection.
It's going to cause a lot of problems.
It's your ordinance. We're following it. And that ordinance is being actually codified by the state, where they're in the process of changing their law to ensure that we maintain those records we're already required to maintain, that we maintain them in a format that they want it in their system. So we're beginning to work that we comply right now. But this, we understand from the state that they're coming down with a change where we'll then have to report all of those to the state.
Okay.
Because it's like groundwater protection is the end result. And that's the ordinance, and it's very clear to us now, and we're making sure we report.
Alderman Solomon, you still have the floor.
What's the case of businesses that may have put in a recent mound system or alternative sewer connection? I can give a couple of examples. One in Ken's area and two in Ken's area.
Right.
In the Rhine Creek intersection?
Yes.
Will they be the same?
What are we going to do with those?
Same as
very high users.
Same as we do with the rest of them.
They don't have to hook up.
They don't have to hook up. Now, if they're causing a pollution problem, they may have to hook up, but if they would still have to do something if they're causing a pollution problem. But with this, the triggering of the sanitary sewer would not require them to hook up. Now, there may be other reasons why they need to hook up, but not because of the insulation of the sewer.
Next question. Say we have a neighborhood that votes to put in sewer.
Everybody has to connect.
Everybody then must connect. In other words, if you identify a road from point A to point B, in 51%, just like we did over here at Briarwood, they all have to connect. Whether they want to or not.
And the reason for that is that people are paying a lot of money for sanitary sewers, and they're hooking up. And the last thing you want is to have one neighbor have to rat on the other person to, you could just about assume that most septic, if they're paying this kind of money, most of the septic systems aren't working. Or they wouldn't be paying, $10,000, $20,000 for sewer. So I think it would be a big mistake, and we have, even like in Briarwood, when we get two-thirds down the way of people connecting, we start getting calls about why isn't such and such connected to sewer. I had to connect, I had to pay all this money, and now we still got sewage flowing down the ditches. So I think in that case, you really need to have everybody connect with sewer. When they're paying for it, they need to connect.
That was quite extraordinary, but there are some other subdivisions that when it rains, you know that they've got septic systems. So, okay. Then it becomes a health problem. Okay. Thank you for your answers.
And that's the way it is right now.
Answers.
Well, those were some of the questions that Tim brought up that I have real concerns about. And I want to go through this thing, and I could sit with the city engineer, but I don't want to see this thing kind of move too quickly along. We got plenty of time. I need a lot of questions answered, and I don't want to get this to be just too ambitious on this. So there's a lot of things that have to be questioned. Questions and answers.
There's no doubt, I mean, that we need to have a policy, but I don't think we have to do it tomorrow night.
No.
I think that we can, you know, I would support referring it in that. I do have a question off of Alderman Solomon's kind of scenario. When you, and maybe you answered, I just didn't catch it. If you have two parcels that we skip, you know, and then developer does that third parcel, like your example, who pays that portion in front of that, those two properties that aren't connecting?
The person that wants to develop.
So the person that wants to develop pays the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then when these people then end up hooking up down the road, and then we reimburse the developer.
They actually reimburse the city, and then we reimburse the developer.
So they actually pay the developer. If the developer is defunct and no longer in operation,
well, 15 years.
15
years. After 15 years, because we just got to figure that you can't trace a person much longer than that. I mean, the developer, so far we've actually been able to track down, and we leave it up to them. They have to show the city attorney, this is some development that was done, and now it's 15 years, 14 years, or whatever, and the person hooks up. We've actually, where the money goes, and they have to show the city attorney a track that shows that this person gets the money from the developer. But after 15 years, no way. Nobody gets it.
So after 15 years, if after 15 years stays with us?
Yeah.
If it's within the 15 years, but the developer was out of business, you know, bankrupt, just like some Icon or whatever, where does that money go then?
It usually goes to the person that ended up giving the business.
The bank or whatever.
Could be the bank. We've had a number of them gone back to a bank. Yep.
If there's outstanding debts.
Our city attorney should really answer this question.
There's outstanding debts, and we collect this money and have to pay outstanding debts, or does that still go to that developer that has left people home to pay?
In the bankruptcy setting, I'm sure that would be listed as an asset. So, the entire program that's decided by the court.
Alderman Will?
Well, as far as the reimbursement, is there a depreciation figured into that? Because, say, it goes out to 14 and a half years, and then all of a sudden we're supposed to reimburse them. Are we reimbursing them at a depreciated value, or reimbursing them for a depreciated pipe that goes in the ground at full value and getting a depreciated pipe for full value?
Well, neither. We're just reimbursing for the cost.
Well, right, but we're reimbursing the cost that we put in, and now we're getting a pipe that's 14 and a half years old, but we're paying full value for it.
We're just paying for the oversize, the making it larger. It has really nothing to do with the pipe itself. It's always within a sewer system, the downstream has to go in first. The downstream is always the larger pipes. So somehow we can't charge.
Still an old larger pipe.
What?
Still an old larger pipe. Still 14 and a half years old.
Pipes are the type of pipe we're using for sewers almost last of them. But.
No, I can write that down, Jack.
Right.
Sewers are putting in nowadays.
It just seems like there should be some depreciation of that 14 years.
From what I'm hearing, I think Alderman Skronsky is going to have a motion tomorrow to put this off for a period of time.
Right.
So I would suggest that we go on to item B, ordinance to repeal, unless anybody has any more questions on that? No. Ordinance to repeal the Office of Director of Finance and Treasurer, to create an Office of Treasurer, and to amend the municipal code as it pertains to such positions. Mark?
follow-up to council directive that was approved at your last meeting in December. At that meeting, we were given four action steps to move forward with. The first one was creating job descriptions for a finance director, a treasurer, and a change to the director of administration's job description. Those are in your packet. Also a separate item on your agenda for tomorrow night. And the ones in your packet did go to personnel committee and were recommended for approval as job description. It was made clear to them that what they were voting on was the language of the job description. In moving that forward and following those action steps, one additional item sort of came to our attention in discussion with the city attorney, that the original director of finance and treasurer job description was created by charter ordinance. And then to amend a chart, to change a charter ordinance, in other words, to change the job description for the director of finance and treasurer, or to break it into two, as was proposed, and then then we were told by common council some move forward, that charter ordinance requires a two-thirds majority. The initial action of the common council in December wasn't approved with a two-thirds majority. So before we did all the other work of all in the other action steps, we thought we should bring it to your direction to make sure that the necessary two-thirds majority was there so that all the other action steps could move forward. So what we've done was prepared the charter ordinance that was necessary, and that's on your agenda for tomorrow night, and that's the topic of this committee of the whole. And it really comes down to, in the council action sheet, the bold print statement where our immediately at this time what we really have are two options. Do you want us to go out and try one more time in the personnel marketplace to fill the job description that for Cal's current job title, the director of finance and treasurer in one position? Or do you want us to in some way restructure that position? We obviously in December proposed one set of restructuring, and we got some direction to prepare those and move forward. But I think the first part of the question of this charter ordinance is which of those directions do you want us to head? Because we do have a pending vacancy we need to address. We either have to go out and try again to fill it, or we need to figure out, if we don't think we can fill it, how are we going to change things? What are we going to change? So we had put together a recommendation in December that took advantage of some opportunities available to us, meaning our current director of finance and treasurer, Cal, doesn't want the full job, was intending to retire, but if the city were restructuring and creating a part-time treasurer job, it is something he would be interested in. So if that job is created, we'll prepare, working with the mayor, new contract extension, or a new contract to take over after his other one expired, and then we could have that built into our structure. Similarly, as part of the common council packet for December that was approved, it takes part of his current job, and instead of having me being in an advisory role to the director of finance and the mayor and the budget, has me take the lead administrative role in the budget and move that under the administration, which is a very typical linkage in many organizations, and was consistent with my background, so it seemed to be a natural fit. This enabled us to split the job up and sort of move the level of expertise of the job, focusing on the accounting aspects of the job, the city CPA aspects, which would broaden the pool of eligible candidates for that job. It does have some added cost to the city compared to past years, but because of the budgeting and the succession plan, it was actually estimated that it would fit in the current adopted budget. It is significantly cheaper than the recommendation Cal has made over the years, which is for a full-time finance director. I believe he would tell you that's still his recommendation. You can leave it the way it is, a budget full-time assistant finance director. But that's a fair bit more costly, probably in the neighborhood of about an additional $40,000 than what we proposed. So you end up getting about an extra 0.7 FTE, we figure, into the financial and treasury services area by having full-time finance director, a half-time treasurer, and assuming mine is about a 0.2, you know, after maybe 0.1. But so you're going to get some extra effort to finance the entire financial services area without hiring a full-time person.
So you would still restructure under the scenario with having the assistant finance director. You wouldn't have the responsibility of that, shifting that towards you at that point.
If you did an assistant finance director, no, you could probably then leave it the way it is. It doesn't mean you couldn't do that, but the pressing need to do it wouldn't necessarily be there. But that was a less cost-effective solution.
I'm moving it over to you.
No, hiring a full-time deputy finance director.
That's more expensive.
More expensive. Probably, I think, something like $40,000. So that question to you is spelled out in the pencil action sheet. Is probably the first part of it is the direction to leave the structure the way it is and go try and find a viable candidate. If we don't, then what would happen is we end up having the best candidate possible, and you'd be filling voids either with some consulting services. For example, you know, maybe the water utility has to get a contract for its own accounting services. Maybe Ehlers is again paid, you know, the $80 to $100 an hour that $120 an hour that they would charge to give, you know, do modeling for the TIF districts and whatnot. Those are just examples. Or do you restructure it and put in the proposal that was suggested as a way to take advantage of the resources we already have and put more FTE effort towards the financial area without exceeding the existing adopted budget for 2012?
I had my piece in personnel. I had my piece last time we discussed this in December. I'm just going to say, I don't think this fixes the problem. I think there are other ways we can solve this problem. Mark highlighted a couple of them just now. We rearrange deck chairs all the time. It's time to get a good deck grader and get it fixed. If there's too much work there, offload some of the issues. And I say this with all due respect because Cal's initiative saved us some money. Well, we can't hire another Cal. So let's send that contract back to Ehlers to do TIF work. CDA, the two TIF, excuse me, CDA, the council will have the two TIF districts pay for that. It's already in the budget. Offload the water utility, increase the pay a little bit. And if Kelso wants, let's extend his contract and go out and hire director of finance and treasurer. No muss, no fuss, no moving chairs around. We're done. That fixes the problem, Mike. That's all I'm going to say.
Alderman Skransky?
Yeah, I have to agree with Alderman Olson. I think our valuable asset of having Kel here, with all the work he's done through the years, his knowledge, has saved us millions of dollars, and I would think whatever we can do workable to lighten his load, keep Kel here at his desire and what he wants, and do the other things. But I would recommend with the mayor and with Mark, with Kel, make it up an arrangement and extend the contract. If there's any extra remuneration, I think it's well worth it. you cannot substitute the knowledge and the experience with Cal that we would not have if we put a new person.
So just a quick clarification. My understanding, Alderman Olson, is he saying, let's not do this charter ordinance, let's keep it the way it is, let's dump off some of these extra things off the plate so it's not as heavy of a workload, and maybe pay that person a little bit more and set up a contract. Okay, that's correct. Is that what you're...
For the unit,
right. And you're agreeing with Alderman Olson not to do a charter ordinance and kind of what we did before, combining them and separating them. You're agreeing with
that. Yeah, I think there's a little more discussion that should go on here.
Okay, because from what I'm seeing here, the recommendation is to not go along with Alderman Olson's saying, but to split it up. So I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. Okay, Mark.
Just to be clear, I can't speak for Cal, nor do I think this meeting is where negotiations would occur, but to this point, Cal has made it sort of publicly clear that he doesn't want the whole job. He's not doing this as a ploy to get more money. Mm-hmm. He was intending to retire full time last August as part of a succession plan to help us get someone to do his job. He agreed to stay until the end of April. If you leave the job as it is and just think you're going to get a contract extension with Cal, that's not, I don't expect that's going to happen. Cal's made that pretty clear to this point. If you happen to determine that you do want to break it up, create a treasurer job that is then a part-time job, now you've recreated something that Cal might be interested in. Cal doesn't want the whole scope of authority and responsibility for all of finance and treasurer. He knows what that entails, and whether he's doing it part-time or full-time, he knows that that would be the full responsibility, and that's not what he's looking for.
One thing, Alderman Scranton. I believe at the last meeting, Alderman Olson, if I'm... I just want to make a comment, but I want to make sure that Alderman Olson, I was saying what you said last meeting, so it was before Christmas and the holidays. So, but you talked about we make decisions, not about who's in the current positions for like something to that order. And if somebody can maybe give me just a little history lesson, because obviously at some point years back we decided to split it apart. Can we just go over a little bit of why we did that, and then if we're going to now. Or I mean, why we combined them, I should say, why we combined the two together, that what has changed besides the workload, but why we put together, and then now why we would want to split it back apart, just to, because in there, the reason why we're splitting it apart, the only reason is we're saying we can't find a candidate, we're going to lose Cal, and so because of that, we're making these changes now, but are they, that's been my whole problem all along, is we make this decision, this is how we operate, this is the structure of the city, and that's why I said we should slow it down, which basically we did, because we're here 3 weeks later having this discussion, so it wasn't like what we were doing was setting a new policy, because we had to take these steps that you bring before us. So could you kind of give me a little background on that?
Sure. It was combined in 2004. Not to be sarcastic, but it was combined in paper, on ordinance. It isn't in stone. Organizational structures change routinely. It's not uncommon. And in 2004, you were looking at the scenario that you had where your treasurer position was vacant because of the theft problems that were there. And at that time, you looked at your internal resources and said, we've got a guy who can do this. Let's just put it all there. Because we had an internal resource. Part of that were some internal control issues that, given it was under the a director of administration that had citywide authority, it was set up and some jobs under Cal were broken out so that the senior accountant, Tom's job, and then the deputy treasurer could be set up for separating some internal control functions so they wouldn't be under Cal. So your director of administration job was very different at that time as well, because Gary had a more of a broad citywide authority. Mine is more narrowly focused.
Pardon?
Not
2004. He had a different responsibility, but he was director of administration.
Right.
As a captain of the job.
No, his job description then gave him a broader level of authority. It was changed when it was after he left and it was restructured for. I'm not sure that's the case. So I.
They're both right.
Yeah. So the question is to the question is to, you know, are we reacting because this is what we have? In part, the answer is yes. If you have a known, viable resource, it's sort of a tested quantity. You know what it works. You know what it can do. You know why sort of push that away and not take advantage of that simply because it doesn't fit a mold or a structure you have. We have an opportunity. I believe Cal has served the city well and worked well. A large part of that has been the cash management and those things that we've structured into the treasurer job. That will give us a period. You know, Cal's still not going to want to work forever. At some point, he will want to complete his retirement. But that gives us time to react to that. And as the council action sheet in December said, at that point, but hopefully we plan ahead, as Olson is suggesting, and maybe we anticipate, because you'll know when you, at an upcoming meeting, if you approve these tomorrow night, the next step that December's action said is, after job descriptions, now we do revised contracts. So if you approve the job descriptions tomorrow, at one of the next Common Council meetings, we'll bring in a new contract appointing Cal to the treasurer job effective at the end of his current one. And you'll know how long that works. It'll probably have a term. It will probably be 18 months or 2 years. And in that interim period, we will know a couple of things. We'll know who we hired to finance and what their final background hour, and we'll have a year or 18 months to test them and know how they might be able to grow into the bigger position. Or we'll find out, okay, maybe by that time finances continue to grow because the city's continuing to grow. And maybe by that time we can make the jump all the way to a full-time position. It is very hard to find a senior professional level part-time person. And unless you're ready to put another full-time position there, to solve what has been identified as a workload issue, this is a way to get very senior part-time and keep us at the level of financial services we've grown to expect and we should expect, and be able to keep that control, not pay consultant rates, and keep it in-house using tested and known resources. That's why, to say, oh, we shouldn't react to just the people we have, I'm not so sure that's the case. The charter ordinances are able to be amended, and if you like the resources you have and you think, you know what, it's maybe not a permanent solution, because 18 months or 2 years from now, we may need another two-thirds to say, you know what, this new person was able to do it. Cal's really retiring for good now. Let's move it over there. Or, you know what? Finances continue to grow. Let's eliminate the treasurer job, which is part-time, and put an assistant full-time finance director. But given the resources we have, it's by far the cheapest way to begin to solve the resource issue there. And it helps us avoid what we learned in our first go-around was a potential problem in the marketplace being able to fill the job in the manner it is.
Thanks, Grant.
Hopefully that answered your question.
Answered some of my questions.
Okay.
Alderman Wilhelm.
So you want to create a part-time treasurer position for Cal, basically?
Yes.
That's right. And the financier director position will be part-time, full-time?
Full-time.
Okay. And then you want to, that will be you?
No.
There you want to hire someone?
I could not do Cal's job. If Cal left today and you told Mark, go do all of Cal's job, mm-hmm. I'm not a CPA. That's in my opinion, it's maybe a simplification, but that's the core, essential, primary thing that I can't do, that Tom's office can't do, that his whole staff combined can't do. There's a CPA aspect of what he has to do that none of us internally are going to fill. But that's primarily what the finance director job description talks about. If you look at the first three things in the job descriptions, it says general ledger, accounts payable, payroll. You know, that's what it's doing.
Okay, under this structure with, say, Cal being the part-time treasurer and the finance director full-time,
separate person,
where do you fit in?
I fit in as the immediate supervisor to them, giving them internal strategic direction and the coordination between them and the mayor.
Yeah, this is the same thing we pretty much looked at before, so you're basically putting this suggestion from last time, trying to implement it. And the problem I had with the last time, which I didn't vote on it, is because we're trying to fill this financial director full-time position who's going to be underneath, how I see it, underneath two people. And you may not see it that way, but I see it as Cal will have the greater knowledge and the background of the city, so this person will always feel like they have to coordinate with that person. And they'll always be going to you because you'll be their immediate supervisor. So to me, to have the qualifications to be some full-time finance director for the city and kind of eventually take over, I just don't see us being able to pull in the kind of person that's going to have the authority to do that if you're going to hire them underneath all this oversight. And I think that's why we had a problem with hiring someone in the first place. It's just, who wants to have that thumb on them like that if they're supposed to be, you know, so experienced?
I think I can answer with just two parts. First, and Alderman Solomon can confirm, you know, we don't usually talk about what we said in interviews, but when we went to fill the position last time, you know, as everyone's aware, we told people there's a succession plan. So you're going to come in for an interim period until the end of April. You'll be reporting to the predecessor role of the job. Is that a problem? And everybody we interviewed said, is that a problem? That's great. Never had an opportunity to have that person available. I firmly believe that that was not an issue in the hiring. Now, in the current structure moving forward, I don't believe there's any issue of two bosses. It's very clear the way it's laid out that the person will report to me. The only confusing part about that at all, and it would only be a problem if Cal and I could not coordinate it, but it would not, there will be no coordination problem, I'm confident of that, is because the charter ordinance requires a 60-day initiation before it can take effect, we will, part of the recommendation is let the succession plan take its course. So when the person, if the person were hired, you know, March 1st or April 1st, they will, by ordinance and by structure, until the end of April, report to Cal. And my role wouldn't take over until May 1st. The reason I don't view that as a problem is because that lets Cal, when there's this pile of stuff becoming a backlog in finance, help work with them and guide them directly and not through me in that initial startup as they sort things out and get things going. Cal and I have worked together well enough in the six or whatever years I've been here that I don't see that as a problem. So the only place where there's potential confusion as to who's the boss is
until April 30th, and I think Cal and I can work well enough together that we're not going to step on each other's toes in that regard, nor have a problem. And if he and I don't see a new applicant having a problem with that. The chain of command will be clear.
Well, still has the floor.
So you think this finance director position will end up being like eventually the next Cal? Is that what your goal is here?
Well, I think to Alderman Olson's point that he referenced and talked about a lot, finance or personnel, and one of the personnel committee members, Mr. Barber, talked about a fair bit, is what we need to do during that 18-month or 24-month period is take a better look at that and, you know, have the time to really break it out. What are all those duties? Do you want to do it with a full-time assistant finance director? You know, how much work do you need? Cal's always asserted we need another full-time person. We've never been able to finance it. This was a way to take advantage of resources and squeeze 0.5, 0.6, 0.7 extra in there and fit it within the budget. So
that's kind of real.
Well, 0.5 is the extra halftime treasurer. We've never had a halftime treasurer. And then is it 0.6 or 0.7 means an extra 0.1 or 0.2 of my time talking about some of those issues. To give you an example, one thing Cal's, you know, never done, the city's never done, we don't have a purchasing policy. You know, maybe we should. We don't have one. Most organizations do. Some get along without them. You know, that's the kind of thing I've written purchasing policies every place I've been into. That's just like I helped with, I know it's not 100% complete, but the sign ordinance, you know, there were, I mean, we have had three or four revisions of it that I did. There are portions of finance that I can help. So part of my time will be this go.
So Mark, what we're moving from is one, what was a full-time treasurer position to basically three people doing that job. I mean, you'll be involved. Cal will be involved, and a new person will be involved in the full-time.
Right now, we have a job that is primarily finance director.
Right.
And then treasurer's account holder.
Right.
That's the...
I mean, with Cal, before we changed, you know, before Cal went to part-time, that's what we have. He was that one person doing all
yes.
of that.
That position is responsible and for all of those functional areas.
Right, so what I'm saying is what we are moving from, based on what we had, we're moving from one person to, well, three people, but at various levels. You know, you would be involved in that, Cal would be involved in that, and then a new full-time person would be involved.
In a sense, that's how we've got more FTE effort to the finance, by taking the job and parsing it out. Breaking it up, we've taken the treasurer piece and some of the special projects with impact fees, sewer rates, health fund rate calculations, put those all in the treasurer. We've taken some limited aspects of the public face of finance and moved that to the director of administration. I'm already at the meetings. I can give budget presentations. I can write the budget write-ups. That kind of thing. Since I'm here at the meeting, when you're sitting at any meeting, common council, you want to say, okay, we need finance to be doing this, and that's your job, Mr. Liberta, make sure it happens. And then I would go to the two people who work in the financial area under me, and that would be the director of finance and the part-time treasurer, and say, here's what we have to do. So, yes, you do. We are taking one job that our experience has pointed out to us appears to be too big for one person given the structure we have, and breaking it out to take advantage of the resources we have.
Alderman Olson.
What do we do with the CFO position that's been approved? Not present. Now, it is mentioned on page 64, but it's not mentioned on page 65. Or it says that the contract's still in place.
You don't need to address the CFO position. It's like we have other position descriptions that have nobody in them. This just becomes a position description with nobody in it. So it was written in that tentative way when we first did it, because we wrote it to only address the succession plan. So when we adopted that, it was known that April 30th, that was a moot job description because nobody fit it, nobody was in it. So that scenario doesn't change at all.
It just seems like a moon sticky. I'm sorry.
Alderman Schmidt?
The process we've already gone through with the hiring that failed was looking for a combined position, correct, for a finance and treasurer?
Correct.
And obviously some of the applicants determined that it was too much work for one person.
Yes, we did. We did have a couple of people who specifically indicated that.
Now, Alderman Olson went back to saying, well, maybe if we just offloaded the management of the TIF districts and the water department or something and took that away, let's go back and revisit, and maybe that more qualified candidates could still fill that original position. And is that kind of what you were getting at? I know he made reference, so otherwise we're just shuffling chairs on a Titanic. But
we're shuffling chairs.
Oh, okay. Well, this would be an indication that maybe we're just trying to throw a couple of chairs over the side and see if the ship will still float. It seems to me that this proposal, if we were going to get anywhere, obviously whatever Cal does is there's a time limit on the amount of time that he's going to continue to work for us. And he's no longer interested in working full-time. He hasn't been full-time now since, last August?
Correct.
So we definitely need to have the opportunity to hire someone that can take on the responsibilities. There's a lot of things that haven't been done since he's gone part-time that have been neglected. So we do need to find a qualified candidate, a CPA, that can take on these other responsibilities. And otherwise, if we continue down the same path that we were on, what happens when the deadline comes up again when Cal decides, well, I've done all I can do part-time. If there's not going to be any help, then I'm just going to move on with my retirement. So it seems to me that these proposals are reasonable way to move ahead to try to get this resolved in a decent amount of time.
Mark, why do you have to have authority over this department? Why can't, if we do this reshuffling, why do you have to have authority when you're going to have now a boss, basically? They're going to have a new finance director, and Cal will be the treasurer, correct? That's how it rolls. Why, you have to have any supervisory role, why would you just be an asset to that department by presenting and putting together the budget and working on the budget and some of the work? Because obviously you're losing, and one of the things we haven't discussed at all is moving planning under the city attorney, and that's item 4 on page 60. And I'm assuming, and tell me, I mean, I should never assume I'm going to, I'm asking a question, if that happens, if that could happen separate from anything. We can still do that,
yes,
because that's in the budget. Whether or not we do the charter ordinance, we can still do that.
Correct.
If we did do that, would the city attorney have full authority to make the decision? Because now he's the boss of that department. He has the authority to make the decision on who the planner is that goes. Not the common council, not the mayor, but the city attorney, because he's the one that has to work with them, that works with them a lot now and does a lot of the air quotes clean up on some of the problems that we have. So I guess there's two questions. One, why would you have to have the authority or any supervisory role? And number two, addressing the city attorney's question. My question on the city attorney.
So first on the supervision aspect. I believe the mayor felt strongly that he didn't want to create two separate supervisors, that you still had internal control issues and issues that were cross-competing between finance, and treasury, because they are, in many respects, clearly interrelated. You know, it's just different points at which you're talking about the money. Are you talking about the money as cash, or are you talking about the money in the accounting language? That's just timeliness. You know? What period do you send it to? So in that sense, the mayor believed that ultimately you needed one supervisor over that functional component. And in looking at the resources we had, you know, frankly, he looked at my background and thought, that makes sense. You've got experience in it. It's what I've done in other communities. My master's is in public finance and urban management. I've overseen those components already. One of the aspects specifically that we had problems with in the interviews for was identifying a person who could do the CPA stuff and do the treasurer stuff and still sit here at meetings and make themselves clear and present things well. Maybe you don't think I do that, but I've done it for a long time. And
I've had a lot of memos sometimes.
A long time is the average.
But so that was one piece we pulled out of the job and said we could put that with me. So the mayor believed having still those two roles under one head could allow for those internal control issues, not cash internal control, but internal coordination issues between the two functional areas of finance, treasury and finance, be addressed by one person who's already a cabinet member, who's already reporting to you and in front of you. And both of those positions are ultimately under your control, because by ordinance, my continued employment is up to you guys, because I'm an officer. The second question was, if planning went to Jesse. Let me back up a half a step and say, as you noted, that really could be treated as a separate issue, because it is possible to leave the planner as a direct report to Joel, just as the community developer, or to the mayor, just as the prior community development director was.
Wait, we're talking about a promotion here?
No, he can do it as planning.
Right now, the planning and goes to you.
Right now, yes. Right now, planning does report to me for immediate supervision.
And what's on the table here, four, is not the mayor, but the city attorney.
This action, actually, as it's written, only takes it away from me. This action doesn't stipulate where it goes, because it's three job descriptions. It's approving a structure and then three job descriptions. And so I don't think any of these actions completes the step of organizationally where does it go.
Well, no, but I disagree, because I'm looking at page 60, and it says restructure planning so that it reports to the city attorney. That makes it very clear to me, so I would not support doing something that I don't know where it's going. Some of this is all a package deal. Like, we don't know what Cal's contracts would be, the next contract, how long it would be here. And so, like, the charter ordinance is set up in a way that we have to be very, very comfortable. Having the four votes that you need to do this, it's kind of like you want to know what's coming after it. Because once you do that, then you can go 3-3 throughout everywhere else and get this done. And so, I want to know exactly what is going to be happening after that charter ordinance vote, after that vote tomorrow night, because I don't want to be sandbagged into one decision knowing that something else is coming. So the question was, it's not here. It shows it's going to city attorney.
So look at page 65.
Okay.
That was the memo that page 60 that you read was a summary. The actual direction that was approved in December was a motion to approve those four actions. The fourth one is prepare a professional services contract with Rezalowski, blah, 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 to incorporate oversight in the planning department. So that is still something that will come back to you.
Right.
So it's conceptually part of the proposal. But this first part, you can say, we want to break that out, but when you take planning away from director of administration, that's not where I want it to go. Leave with the mayor. He doesn't need direct supervision from the attorney. So that it's, I'm only pointing out that the actions that are on tonight's agenda doesn't definitively decide who oversees planning.
Wait a second. No. In the budget, the $47,000 was to move, and we talked about this at great length, to move planning to the city attorney. Why are we now saying to the mayor?
No, it has been our recommendation that planning continue to receive direct oversight from cabinet level positions, and there are contingency appropriations to do that. I'm just saying that relative to that, the board does have alternatives they can consider, but that has been our recommendation, and that was in the budget. You do have contingency appropriations to do it, but before that action would take effect, the Common Council has to take some overt action putting that into effect. So, and that isn't any part of the items that are in on your agenda tomorrow night.
This makes me more uncomfortable than I was like 2 minutes ago. So I'm going to ask, then I still haven't gotten an answer of if it gets moved to the city attorney, does he have the complete authority to make the decision on who stays and who goes?
No, the mayor still would. Because Jesse is not a city employee. He's a contractor. And B, your ordinance says that the termination authority is the appointing authority, which in this case by ordinance is the mayor. I would say that as a contract agent, even if you were supervising planning, you would not want contractors making employment decisions. That would probably exceed the scope of authority and probably be a red flag for the IRS as to what his status would be. I think it's clear to everybody he's a contractor. So I'm guessing he wouldn't want that decision, and it would be inconsistent with the ordinance that says the appointing authority, which by ordinance is your mayor, is the one that determines which of them to hire. Except for the Common Council, obviously, which has hiring and firing authority with planning manager, because he's an officer who takes 2/3 of the Common Council.
Alderman Olson.
It's important to recognize that in the budget discussions, there was specific conversation as to relieving the mayor of the requirement to lay off the last hire. We made specific instruction to the mayor that he was permitted to ignore that in support of what you're saying.
Mark shaking his head.
It wasn't any kind of motion, but in the approval of your civil service rules, it says only if you specifically tell him to follow a seniority does he have to follow seniority. When you approve the budget, you didn't say to do it. So he can, following seniority or not following seniority, is currently the mayor's discretion.
To be discretionary.
The point is that the mayor's discretion is not defined by statute. And that's the big point. The other big point is, now as board of directors, I think we all recognize that we're supposed to be providing a vision for the city and a roadmap to achieve that vision. This is, what's that street in San Francisco?
That's what it is. This downhill.
Lombard Boulevard, yeah. Lombard Street. That's what this is. We're not doing our jobs.
I don't know. I just sit here thinking about this once. If the city attorney, he's going to be oversight of planning. And I understand you're saying, well, he's a contract employee and that. And he doesn't maybe have the right to make those decisions. I remember when Bill Parcells was still coach of the Patriots. I believe it was the Patriots or maybe it was the Jets. And he complained about having to cook the food but not be able to go pick the groceries, go shopping. that's kind of what is, you know, if he's going to see what works, what doesn't, I would think that we'd want him to make those decisions. I know I would.
Or at least make the recommendation back to the council. I mean, that would be minimal. If, you know, he's overseeing the department, he at least should have, something should be written up that gives him the authority to give him a ability to make a recommendation to the council on what's working and what's not. Not to have his hands tied. It's going to take that position.
Alderman Schmidt?
I suppose under the direction the city attorney would have the ability to make a recommendation then? Would that be a recommendation to the mayor? Or?
Well, again, it would come back to that professional services contract that is going to spell out, if it were put under Jesse, spell out that, yes, he can guide them, direct them, and he can assign tasks to those staff. So that delegation of to him, if it were ultimately done, would define the scope of his authority. And presumably, if you're having them report to him, then you're giving him the ability to direct them in their daily, their daily workload. Probably the only thing you're not really giving them is the direct authority to hire, fire, and reprimand. You're probably having the reprimand get approved by the mayor first, so that it's coming from your internal chain of command.
So this limit would be that we could make a recommendation, but it would, as far as hiring or firing, but it would have to go back to the mayor then to make the ultimate decision.
I believe so. Except for the planning manager himself, which comes to this council only. Even the mayor can't.
So just ultimately, we would have the ability to make that final decision on firing, or it would still go back to the mayor?
The mayor. Except for, again, the planning manager, which by ordinance is at the discretion of the county council, which is based on state law.
Alderman Scransby, right?
Yeah, you know, it people in private business, you have people that work for you, and you say, okay, this is your responsibility. But you don't have the authority to do anything, and that's always half-hearted, and that's a joke. If you give somebody the responsibility and they have to be accountable, you've got to give them the authority, the ultimate authority, to make a decision. And that's the bottom line. So you can say, yeah, you could direct a person, you can move, you can do everything. But if it comes down to a point where you have to make the ultimate decision, oh, you can't do that. We got to give that to somebody else. That's false. Well, I mean, so the point of is, if that responsibility is given, you give them the authority, and it's the ultimate authority is saying, you're not working out. It ain't working. Sorry, we're parting ways.
That's what I'm arguing.
And I think that's the way it should be.
Alderman Olson, did you have?
Yeah, Alderman Solomon just
rumble like a hear it. It's
not on the agenda, and I kind of agree with him, but I'm going to make a statement anyway.
You're right.
I agree with Ken and Alderman Taylor. You know, I don't know what oversight means relative to supervising a department. I don't know, it's a lot like kissing your sister. So, you know, either get in for a penny, in for a pound. That, you know, hire, fire, whatever the statutes permit us to do. And the reason I'm having this discussion is Jesse and Mark are going to negotiate this contract, I assume, so give direction. Hire and fire, maybe not. Recommend?
Sure.
Recommend?
Sure.
And so move on.
I'm going.
Well, it seems to me like there might be a piece of this missing if we're going to try to act on this, because, you know, just to say this might happen and then it doesn't take place with the planning part of that, and that's not spelled out anymore. So, you know, I don't want to jump to something that's three quarters of the way done. I'd like to see the other section.
That's possible. When you look at the four action steps that were approved in December, the only one that was referenced specific for this meeting was have the three job descriptions for January 10th, because it was figured
you get the job descriptions, then we do a revised contract for Cal. We prepare the one for Jesse, because we would have guidance that, yep, that's the structure you want, so we'll go fill in the other details. So it was the dominoes falling. The only thing I've done, which has sort of brought it back to a head, was that, you know what, we don't have to do any of those dominoes if the charter ordinance isn't going to fly, because that takes four votes. So we worked to get that prepared for tonight as well, and just said, you know, and if that doesn't get approved tomorrow, then, you know, we're going to know that the bus is coming on April 30th. Cal's out of here, and go advertise for Cal's position.
There's a reason that we can move on, unless people have more comments, as I'm sure we'll discuss this tomorrow when the mayor's here. There's probably was some reason at some point, I don't know why, they decided that certain things would be charter ordinances, certain things would take 3/4 votes or 2/3 votes or whatever, because it's probably a pretty major decision. Usually when you make that decision, you want to know exactly what's coming after it. And with us, once this vote takes place, and if it's 4-2, okay, we just saw what the last vote was, so there's obviously some kind of, once that is done, that's the last thing that comes before us that needs that. Everything else can do, but with 3-3 tie, mayor breaks a tie. And we know what direction that is all going. And so it's kind of like, if we decide, and that's kind of what Alderman Wilhelm's getting at, if we make this decision tomorrow night, and it is approved, then the cat's out of the bag, and it's not going back in, and everything else can go right through. And then there's, I mean, questions on what we just talked about, planning, and, you know, when I was, this whole last, on the 20th was, you know, this is what we're talking during the budget, this is what we're talking about doing, and then, well, it could do this, it may do this, makes me, once again, uncomfortable, and what makes it uncomfortable is saying, why did they set it up this way to need 4 votes? Why was this not just a simple majority? Why was, and I think it gives us the chance to slow it down and take a look, and that's kind of where I'm at, Mark.
Two things. In that regard, why it takes 4 votes is because the state statute identifies for every municipality a set of officers that can only be removed by the common council with 2/3 vote. So ultimately, it gives the it makes you, your organization, have a little stability and protection from fluctuating simple majorities before you change your planning manager, your city engineer, your treasurer, your clerk. So there's specific items in that ordinance that says these jobs can only be changed by statute. Treasurer is one of those. So Jesse opined in 2004, since treasurer is one of those, you're creating a director of finance and treasurer, that fits in here. You've added a couple to that on your own because home rule allows you to put a couple more in that category. My job's one of those, for example. State statute doesn't require it to be an officer. City of Franklin said it is. So that's why it takes the 2/3.
Right, but my point is at some point, someone at state level said these are important decisions, which you mean you need a supermajority. And so I'm saying that this is one of those. And we have certain things that are going to take place after this decision is made, and that does not require the 2/3 vote. That's my point.
And so my second point was, those are all itemized on page 65 or 201, whichever way you're looking at it, those action steps. That's the rest of what has to happen to do it. So if you think, okay, maybe we want this, but we want the other pieces, I guess I would encourage you, do it now or make it part of your motion tomorrow, to read 1, 2, 3, and 4 and tell us what specific pieces do you want to see in final form before you're ready to vote for it. If you want to see a final proposed contract that the mayor's already worked out with Cal, if he were to take this, you know, this job that we haven't yet created effective, you know, May 1st, we can try and put that together. You can see how it would affect my contract. You know, my contract, as I pointed out, for a year, needs to be revised. It's sort of hanging in limbo there. And, you know, if you make this change of planning, mine should be addressed too. If you're going to roll that overall budget authority, it's a provision in there. You know, item 4, you know, we can work with Jesse, and he and I can come up with one. There's always you know, that would be probably a good thing for us to have, a better spelled out itemization of the scope of authority of the city attorney and the payment structure involved there. So if you look through 1 through 4, you could spell out what you want us to have, and if there's anything in 1 through 4, you're still saying, you know, I sort of like this direction, but give us an alternative on this. So whether it's, you know...
Are you saying that before we decide on the charter?
I'm saying if that's what you want, if you as the board of directors need that to move forward, let us know and we'll work our best to get it by the next meeting, because April 30th is coming, whether we act now or not. You know, I either need to move forward with re-advertising for a finance director and treasurer position, or we need to move forward with how is it going to change. One of those two things has to happen. We have to move forward with filling the current approved position, or we need to decide how we're going to change it. And we should do so pretty quickly.
Alderman Solomon.
I haven't said a word yet, so I think most people understand where I'm coming from. And I'm going to just say that we need to move forward tomorrow night with these three job descriptions and the restructuring of the finance treasurer's office, number one. If you don't want to do that, you can probably say goodbye to Mr. Patterson. Number two, also on tomorrow night's agenda, happens to be refinancing of bonds internally instead of externally. He's going to save us $430,000. The guy's sitting right there. Now, if you think you're going to find that from a contractor, you're not. It's not going to happen. And that's not the first time he's done that for us. So all of this bull crap about where planning goes, what I'd like to do is have a supervisor in charge of planning and a supervisor in charge of building inspection instead of Mark. That's the natural fit. But we can't afford it. Now, the structure that you're going to be voting on tomorrow night is the same structure we had prior to 2004, before Cal got here. Exact same structure. Separate functions. And Cal came and saw what was happening and put in the controls needed under his supervision. And that's why we changed it. I mean, we were the talk of the town. So we still need those separation of powers there. We also need somebody that can have the foresight to say, hey, we can save over $400,000 by doing this. Contractor isn't going to point that out to you. They could care less. Enough said. I will move tomorrow night to approve the three job descriptions and move forward with the reorganization.
Plan. All right. Item, there should be more discussion on that. Item C, Wisconsin Act 97 regarding closing hours for Class A establishments, consideration of amending Franklin Municipal Code to prohibit Class A fermented malt beverage sales from 12 midnight to 6 a.m. Sales currently prohibited from 9 p.m. 8 a.m. per Franklin Municipal Code. Madam Clerk.
Well, I really have nothing to add other than we did survey a few surrounding communities. You can see the sheet in front of you. Oak Creek is thinking about change, or they're actually going to take action on their February agenda. Muskego did not change, and it's on their meeting tomorrow night. Greenfield
Greenfield is reviewing it, and Greendale said that they conform to the current state law, which is prohibiting sales from 12 midnight to 6 a.m. So it's really a council decision.
And that's what we brought. This was on our agenda last common legislative committee, and we discussed it and said it wasn't. I mean, most of the times, this comes, you know, everything licensing comes here, and we just wrap right through it. So we felt that would be a good idea to put on this agenda to get the other three aldermen's input on it, because otherwise, just when we get to licensing, no discussion unless we're revoking something. Alderman Olson.
Blessings, I'm not on licensing. I'll give you my opinion. I don't see any reason to change the ordinance to make this less restrictive. I see no need to do that. If you want to make it more restrictive, I'd be okay with that. So I say leave alone.
Okay.
I do want to add one thing. The only Class A establishment that we had that even inquired about it was Roundy's, and they really were not pressing one way or another. They just inquired about it. So it's not that we've had Roundy's.
Oh, Roundy's.
It's not that we've had somebody lobbying to have it done one way or another.
Move to adjourn.
The motion to adjourn. The second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
We're done.